We have to be sure at Meir Shishim.
Meir Shmoyim. 100 times high. What's this? It's cost nicht kein Geld. Wait a minute, I've got to turn off my cell phone. There were a number of things that moved in the, you know, in the Shia. I have to say a few things that had touched me, especially, of course, I'm your Rebbe for Torah and the Jerusalem Post. So first of all, I think the more I grow up, I will not use the words the older I get, the more I grow up, the more emotional I become. I can't tell you what I go through when I know of the terrible pigua that took place in Turkey. But for 2,000 years did we have Israeli planes flying into a foreign country to pick up the Jews and bring them home. A Tsar plane, a Mogen David Adom plane, doctors, nurses, medical equipment, just to take care of a few Jews in Turkey, who most probably shouldn't have been there anyway, but that makes absolutely no difference whatsoever. I just became so choked up. Oh, if only 70 years ago we would have had an Israeli Air Force to go in and pound and destroy an enemy. Pick up Jews and bring them to Eretz Yisrael.
The Yemenites.
Ah, so that brings us to this morning, that in some undercover mission, the last Jews of Yemen who want to leave arrive in Eretz Yisrael on Sunday. There are still 40, 50 Jews who want to remain there. Well, listen, for us, it's a bit more than personal. We have a son-in-law, a Taimani, but his parents came before Operation Magic Carpet. Well, I know my Nechitin, I think they put him in an orange crate. It was a little bicycle. They put him on an orange crate, and I don't know, they walked across who knows what, and he was in an orange crate on a donkey or a camel. I could make up a story, what's the difference? But anyway, he came already in the early 40s, late 30s or early 40s, his family came from Yemen, and then it was only after the establishment of the state that the rest of the Jews, it means another country in the exile closed, a history of 2,500, 3,000, gone, over, finished. Now, what's interesting about this, of course, is that two pages later, in the Jerusalem Post, there's an ad by Geffen Publishing for a book called Touching History. So that's really what we're doing. Now, that's very interesting. Yeah, four books are advertised there. Mine is on top, and you put somebody else. But it's above a set of five stars by Rabbi Shmuel Golden, Unlocking the Torah Text. So Shmuel Golden lived on my block in West Hempstead, and before he went into the government, he was my youth leader in West Hempstead. And then he went on to greatness. He's been the rabbi in Englewood for many years. He was president of the RCA, Biblical Council of America. Very nice. Okay. And of course, another interesting article was that California, that's suffering from a drought and has difficulty with its crops, may finally be saved by Israeli irrigation. Wow. California will be saved by Israeli drip irrigation. I'm not going to tell you about the letters to the editor. One of them is a young man whom we watched grow up. Rabbi Yitzchak Elephant, who is the chief rabbi of Dimona, has a very nice letter, a number of good letters with regard to the whole Kotel business, and the important thing is we are touching history here all the time. Unbelievable, all the time. Okay. This year is most probably, if you talk about, if I would make a list of my five most beloved shiurim, this is it. It developed over a period of 45 to 50 years. Every number of years I updated, and this is the update for 5,776. I remember exactly when I started thinking of it. I was still in Toronto, but not for a long time ago. We're talking about the 60s of the past century. There is a very fascinating dialogue between the students of Rav Shimon ben Yochai and their great Rebbe, Rav Shimon ben Yochai. We're living in Rav Shimon ben Yochai country, you understand? Like Berman, you don't. The students, there it is, number one. The following dialogue between Rav Shimon ben Yochai and his students touches upon the verse currently under discussion. It is in the Megillah. This is in the Masechet Megillah. Shalu Talmidav et Rav Shimon ben Yochai, the students of Rav Shimon ben Yochai, asked their great Rebbe, what a question! Mit neimar et chadus on em shet yischol shabauto ador kloya. Why were the enemies of Israel? The term Son Ehem Shel Yisrael appears often in Talmud. Son Ehem Shel Yisrael, the enemies of Israel, always refers to the Jewish people. But we don't want to talk, say bad about them, so we use the euphemism is Son Ehem Shel Yisrael. Why was there a decree that the Jews of all 127 states of the realm of Achashverosh to be destroyed? What did they do? Mipnei malit chayvus on em shel Yisrael shebautoh ador kloya. Why did the enemies of Israel, meaning Yechiel, of that generation deserve extermination? Unusual response by their Rebbe. Abraham said to them, in Ruata, you tell me? He's most probably assuming that, listen, a question of such importance, such significance, you have any ideas? You're thinking about it. What do you think? Maybe that also has to be taken into consideration as we are learning this Gemara is. This is about 500-600 years after the Purim story. Which may very well be that, you know, sometimes it takes many years. A lot of time has to pass in history before we can come face to face, before we can come to grips with a near profound tragedy. Kal v'chomer, the real tragedy of our days, I don't think we will understand it for many years to come. We may, most probably, will never understand it until some revelation will come from God. But here it is, 500-600 years later, they're asking their Rebbe, why was there a decree to destroy all the Jews? And he tells them, you tell me. He was right, that they did have an idea. Amr they said to him, because they enjoyed the party of that wicked and evil man Achashverosh. Everybody was invited to the party, and Jews went.
And they ate.
Now, it doesn't say because they ate at the party. You know why it doesn't say because they ate at the party? Because the food was glunt kosher, l'machnadrin. The greatest Mashiach of all, Mordechai Yehudi, was no problem with the food or with the drink. As it says at the beginning of the Megillah, that everything that's going to be served is kiritzon ish for ish. according to the will of each individual. The problem was that they enjoyed the party. We'll get back to that in a moment. They enjoyed it. You can go to a party, of course you have to go. You know, the king invites, so you go. Then you can enjoy it. That's a completely different mindset. If they shenanigans, the students said, because they enjoyed the party. Ah, so the great Rebbe, Rav Shimon Yochai, responds in Kenshav, Shushan Yaharogu, if so, if it's because the Jews of Shushan enjoyed the party, why is there a threat of destruction for Jews throughout the whole world? Why are Jews in the rest of the world guilty of the fact that some Jews in Shushan enjoyed the party? In case, the Rebbe is asking a very good question. In case of the Shushan Yaharogu, if so, if Haman's decree was a punishment for their enjoying the queen's banquet, only the Jews of Shushan should have been killed. But Jews the whole world over should not be killed. Amrulo, so the student said, okay, Rebbe, and Morata, you tell us. Amr l'hamser, Rav Shimon Yochai said to them, Mibnei sheshtachavu l'tzelem, because they bowed down and prostrated themselves before the image. What does this mean? 45 years before the whole Purim story. It's chapter 3 in the book of Daniel. In chapter 3, Daniel describes that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, erected an awesome statue to himself in the valley of Dura, and he called upon all peoples to come and bow down before that statue. And Jews bowed down to the statue. There were three right-wing extremists who refused to bow down, and they were Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. We'll get back to this in a moment too. So Rav Shimon Yochai is saying, not because they enjoyed the party, it's because 45 years earlier, the Jews had bowed down to the statue of Nebuchadnezzar. Forgive me, I failed to mention, I forget things too. This year is in memory of Tzivya, Chaya, Tzivya, Chaya.
Bat Aryeh Lev.
We're learning this great year, like the previous ones are in her memory. So now, we now have a problem with Rav Shimon ben Yochai. What does something that happened 45 years earlier have to do with the Purim story? The only thing that's accomplished by Rav Shimon ben Yochai's answer is that already included Jews throughout the Babylonian Empire. So it's not really limited to the Jews of Shushan. But this is something like out of left field. Well, what does this have to do with the days of Mordechai and Esther? So the Gemara, the students come back at Rav Shimon Yochai Amulu, they said to him, V'chimasu pan yesh b'davar? Does God show favoritism? If Jews bow down, then they should be punished. Why were they saved? How do you like that? Why were they saved? Amar lahem, so Rav Shimon ben Yochai said, Hem lo osu ela lefanu. They only performed an act outwardly. They only did it because there was a decree that they do it. They did not bow down to this statue because they wanted to prostrate themselves before the statue. There are things that are done because of coercion. So they only did it outwardly. So therefore their punishment, Rav Shimon Choy says, was only something outwardly. God never planned to permit them to be destroyed. There was a threat of destruction, but the threat was lifted. Okay, no threat. It's a difficult conversation to understand. The question that on Rav Shimon ben Yochai is what's the relationship between bowing down to the statue 45 years earlier? What does that have to do with the Purim story? And the story of the statue itself is a bit problematic, because there are two opinions. There are two opinions in the Gemara amongst the Rishonim. Was this really idolatry? Was it an idol that he erected, or was it a statue of himself, so that it was bowing down and pledging allegiance to the great mighty leader Ahasuerus, which is not idolatry at all by any stretch of the imagination? So this is a machlokes. Let's assume that it's not idolatry. So it wasn't a terrible thing. So it's not good. Okay. Yes.
Didn't he consider himself a god?
No. We have no indication of that. Certainly not in this chapter. Three shias did not. Didn't Ahasuerus consider himself a god?
Nebuchadnezzar.
I'm sorry, Nebuchadnezzar.
He
may have, but we certainly don't have any indication. As far as the Gemara and the Rishonim and Rabbeinu Tam in Tosis, Rabbeinu Tam in Tosis says this was an outsized ego. I mean, we don't have great leaders. Great, I use great with a little G. You understand? There were leaders in the world, but there weren't big statues of Stalin all over Russia. And when the Soviet Union fell apart, there were pictures in the papers of people tearing down the statues of Stalin, the statues of Lenin. It was a statue dedicated to him, or of him. Somebody else did consider himself a bit of some kind of an idol that was Haman. The Gemara says that about Haman. But all right, let's go. So we have a problem here. So number one, the problem with Rav Shimon Yochai, we understand. 45 years earlier, what does that have to do with it? The problem with his students, of course, is the question that Rav Shimon ben Yochai himself asked them. If the Jews of Shushan enjoyed the party, so why should there be a threat of destruction upon Jews the world over? How didn't this occur to the students? How could they have said anything of the sort? Jews in one city enjoy a party, and they may have gone originally, because they had to go, or felt they had to go, or convinced themselves they had to go, or they were curious, they wanted to see what's happening over there. No, you know, you can never tell. All right. Anyway, I believe that this dialogue is an extremely, extremely important dialogue. And in the final analysis, there may not be that big of a difference of opinion between the Shimon ben Yochai and his students. I believe that in order to understand this Gemara, what we have to do is take a look, or I can't help it. I have to say it. We have to touch history for a moment. The entire Purim story, according to the Gemara, is taking place toward the end of the 70 years of the Babylonian exile. This is after it's not the end of the Babylonian exile, it's 70 years or 69 from the time of the destruction of the second temple. First Beit HaMikdash is destroyed by Babel. Jews are taken to exile. Bible. If we want to understand what's happening in the Megillah, then you know what we have to do? We have to take a look at that period of 70 years. And we have to look at it from beginning to end. And we have to find out what happened to the Jewish people during those 70 years. We're very fortunate that we have an absolutely powerful and graphic description of what Jews looked like at the beginning of those 70 years. And it's enshrined for us for all time. A verbal portrait of what Jews looked like. Chapter 137 in Tehillim. Al Naharot Babel Shom Yoshavnu. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat. Gam Vochino, we're talking about the Jews are on their way into exile. They have survived the destruction of Beit HaMikdash, Yerushalayim, the loss of their independence, exile from their land. We're talking about one of the greatest tragedies to befall the people. And there they are, they're sitting by the rivers of Babylon. There we sat, Gam Vochino, and we cried. Bezochreinu et Zion. They're sitting by the rivers of Babylon and they remember Zion. Avaravim betocha tolinu kinaroteinu. On the willow trees, we hung our harps, our lyres. According to many of the Farsim, this is being sung sadly by the Levim, the prophets, the Levites who used to play the instruments of the Beit HaMikdash. There's no Beit HaMikdash anymore. So they hung their musical instruments on the willow trees. You know why? Not only because they're not playing there, but something else. Kishon. Because there, those who had taken us captive, they asked us, Jew, sing for us, the Tolalenu Simcha, and those who taunted us, they said, come on, Jews, be happy. Shirulanu, sing to us, Meshir Tzion, sing to us your Israeli songs, your songs of Tzion. Well, what emotional torture this is. There's the famous story, I think it was in Ghetto Lodge, that the commander, the German commander, Yimach Shemaya, gathered all the Jews together and he told them, sing. I want you to sing, Jews, sing. Said somebody started singing, the song didn't go. Then one fella got up and he started singing to the words of Mirvim Ze Ibelebin. We're going to outlive them. And it caught on. Thousands of Jews started singing, we will outlive them. And the song became that terrible, the commander couldn't take it. He shouted, stop it, stop it. The Babylonians, come Jews, sing for us the songs of Zion. What's the response? Their response is, Eich Moshir, Eshir Hashem, Arad Maklechach, how can we sing the songs of Zion on strange foreign soil? They feel, we don't belong here. We don't belong here. This is alien land. We don't belong here. And it was then, and here begins the second part of this capital tale. where they take the eternal oath. And there they took the oath, Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Imi. If I forget you, Yerushalayim, let my right hand forget its coming. Tidbak Lishoni Lechiki, let my strong tongue stick to the palate of my mouth. Im Lo Eskerechi, if I will not remember you. Im Lo Aalek Yerushalayim, Al Rosh Simchati, if I will not raise Yerushalayim over the moment of my greatest joy. The fact is that there are three oaths over here. Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yimini means in action. If I don't remember you, I should not be able to act. Tidbak Lishoni Lechiki and Loes Gerechi is talking not only about deed, but it's talking about in word. I shall not forget you by word. In Lo Alek Yerushalayim, Arosin Chati is talking about the Chashava thought. There are three oaths. In thought, in word, and in action, we swear never to forget Tzion v'Yerushalayim. Now comes the third part. If the first part, was talking about the past. On Harod Baal Shem Yashavu, there we sat at the rivers of Babylon. That's where they asked us, they taunted us and they asked us that we should sing the songs of Tzion. The second part of these nine psukim is talking about the present, when they take the oath, Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yimini. Now begins the third part, and in this third part they're talking about the future. And here is where they bring God into the picture. They are addressing him. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam, Zechor Hashem L'vnei Edom et Yom Yerushalayim, remember for the children of Edom the day of Yerushalayim. We'll talk about this in a moment. Ha'omrim, those who said, Oru, Oru, destroy, destroy, Adam Yisopo, until its very foundations, destroy Yerushalayim utterly. Bazbogel HaShaduda, the violated daughter of Bavel, Ashrei Sheyishalimach, may I have to say, Bavel, they exiled the Jews, they destroyed the first Beit HaMikdash. But they mention Edom and Bavel. Now there are two approaches to this. One approach is that Edom represents those who destroyed the second Beit HaMikdash, Rome. Rome was called Edom. There are others, among them mainly the Ebn Ezra and many of the Mepharshim who agree with him, that even by the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, Edom was egging on the Babylonians. They came to watch the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. They stopped Jews who attempted to flee, could not flee through Edom. So that Edom, Esav, and Bavel, both of them are guilty of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Ashrei, now you have to get ready to listen to what's going to happen here. Ashrei sheyishalim loch et gemulech. Oh, we praise the one who's going to repay your terrible cruelty, shegomal talon, that you did to us. The Rebbeinu is going to take nekama for us. And here comes one of the most difficult psukim in Tanakh. But it may have been a difficult pasuk for all previous generations, but I don't think it should be a difficult pasuk for us. Ashrei sheyochez v'nipeitz et olalayach el hasela. Fortunate is the one who's going to take your babies and crush them on the rock. Crush babies on rocks. This is the only indication we have that this is exactly what the Babylonians did. And they have to be repaid measure for measure. That cruelty, we saw in our time. We saw, oh, did we see that millions of times over. You know that if we're talking already about now, what is the story that was all over the papers? That the head of the Mossad, Dai Dagan, had in his office a picture of his grandfather, Ayib, that wouldn't pay us, down on the floor, being beaten by German soldiers. And he told his people who went out on missions, this is never going to happen again. Incidentally, this you may not notice, you know, crushing. By the way, not saying that we need a crush. You take care of it. We're not too good. We're not too good in the Nakama business and the taking revenge. We should be a little bit better. We're soft. We're softies. We're too soft sometimes. But I hope a lot of this work has been done for us by the agencies of this great country. All right. Everybody remembers. We don't have time. We don't have any kayach. The end of the kinnis on Tisha B'av. The end of the kinnis, the kinna of Eli Tzion. Tzion, mourn. Mourn for your terrible losses. That was written by Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi. And there's a sentence where they just, you know, passes us over quickly. Mourn. Alei machatz v'rov makos, for the wounds and the many blows. Asher huku nizireho. You don't have this, I'm reading it. Mourn for the blows that your people were struck by the enemy. And you know what else you should mourn for? Al niputz eli sela, the smashing upon the rack of olaleha ne'areha, her little babies and her children. Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi put that in, and he obviously put it in on the basis of this pasuk in Al Maharis Baruch. All right, now, fast forward. Sixty-nine years later, the Jews who had taken the oath, and now invited to a party by Ahasuerus. And you know what? They go. Not only they go, they enjoy. One of the reasons the Gemara says to the party was that Ahasuerus' calculation was that the 70 years of the Babylonian exile that had been prophesied by Yirmiyahu were over, and the Jews hadn't been redeemed. Ar glick of the Patrofen. Ahasuerus is thrilled the Jews are not going to be redeemed. Yirmiyahu made a big mistake. The truth is, the big mistake was made by Ahasuerus. He didn't know when to begin the counting of the 7 years. Anyway, the party is his celebration that Jews are not going to be redeemed. And Jews are sitting at the party. That's why the students of Rav Shimon Yochai say, Nanu, they enjoyed the party. If they would have gone and sat there like, they're no Jews, that's one thing, but they're enjoying the party. You know what it means? That a dramatic change has taken place in 69 years. 69 years ago, we're talking about a people that refused to make peace with the idea of exile. They cannot sing, there can be no joy. Al atmas nechon, strange, foreign and alien soul. 69 years later, Babel is not foreign, alien and strange soil. Bavel has become, I can't help it, I have to use it, it's become home. Become home. Oi! Oh! this powerful description of how Jews felt at the rivers of Babylon. Gone. They don't feel that anymore. Yes.
Yeah, Rabbi. Didn't Ahasuerus also wear the clothes of the Kohen Gadol and drank from a cannon?
He's right. Even more than that. The Gemara says that they took out the garments of the Kohen Gadol and they took out the cups and vessels of the Beit HaMikdash that had been taken to Babylon, and they used that at the time. So Rav Shimon ben Yochai, that's why the students say, because they enjoyed the party. Rav Shimon ben Yochai says, well, if so, it should be the Jews of Shushan and not the whole world. So he's going to say, because 45 years early they bowed down to the statue of Nebuchadnezzar. What's he saying? You know what he's saying? He's making an extremely important point. During the course of these 70 years, there had to be the crucial moment at which things changed. What's the moment at which Al-Maharos Bavel Jews became not Jews of Al-Maharos Bavel, but became Bavel Jews? What moment did the change begin? At what moment could you already predict? Oi, who knows where this is going to end? So he says, when Nebuchadnezzar erected the statue, I described the scene like this. It's very serious, but I can't help it, I did. The moment that the decree was given that all people have to bow down before the statue, the organized Jewish community in Babel went into action. The Rabbinical Council of Babel met in special session. The United the Jewish Appeal of Babel called plenary sessions. Union of Orthodox, better watch that. The Union of Orthodox Synagogues of Babel held emergency meetings. What do we do? The first thing we have to ask our Chabanim, we have to ask a Pesach Halacha. And then the Pesach Halacha started coming out. And one of them quoted a Tosis that was going to be written 1,500 years later, that this is, it's really not a form of idolatry. This is a statue to Nebuchadnezzar. And therefore, it's permitted. You can bow down to it. But then they find out that there is an extremist group. There's an extremist group called Hananiah Mishael Bar Azariah, who literally said, over on dead bodies. Because the law was, anybody who doesn't bow down is going to be thrown into the burning furnace. And Hananiah Mishael Bar Azariah said, we are not bowing down. And of course they were condemned roundly by the organized Jewish community. The Babylonian Jewish press attacked them editorially. The Babylonian Haaretz, Shalano, you understand, attacked them viciously. These are the right-wing extremists, you understand? These are the ones who are going to bring destruction upon the Jewish community. They are not part of the organized Jewish community. Down with them! And of course, they made sure to put all sorts of ads into the paper saying that we disassociate ourselves completely from Hananiah, Mishael Bar Azariah. Or maybe they used the Babylonian names, which are used in that chapter in Daniel, Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. Those were the, Harry, Marvin, and Stephen. Okay. Anyway, the end of the story, of course, is that Hananiah and Mishael Bar Azariah were thrown into the furnace, and they emerged unscathed and unharmed. Shimon ben Yochai is telling his students, the moment Jews made that crucial compromise was downhill. By making that compromise, they're saying, listen, we live in this country, we pay taxes here, they protect us, there are roads, there are streets, and there's sewage, and there's an army, Melevin Machen over here. The moment they decided to bow down, it was no longer Admat Nechar. It was no longer foreign land. So Rav Shimon ben Yochai is telling the students, that crucial, fateful, dangerous compromise was the beginning of the end. Therefore, we could have predicted then that 45 years later, Jews are going to enjoy the party of Ahasuerus. What do you do now? What do you do now? What do you do now? How do you save the Jewish people? So here it is. This is 45 years ago for me. It was a dinner in Toronto. It was a sort of a semi-Hasidic day school, Yeshiva Torah, that had started. And it was a fellow by the name of Paul Reichman, who was one of the supporters of this institution. And they made a dinner. I think it was one of their first dinners. And the invited guest speaker was one who was then the Roshiva of Lakewood, Rav Shneur Kotler, the son of Rav Aaron. Rav Aaron died in 62 or 63, and this was in the middle 60s, so that'd be 64, 65. So I'm at the dinner. I can say that from this dinner, I was nana. I enjoyed the dinner. Why did I enjoy the dinner? Because Rav Shneur Kotler was speaking, and he said one sentence that blew my mind away. Because I had been thinking about everything I said up, and I've been thinking about it, and then here comes one sentence from Rav Shneur Kotler in the name of his father that just, I remember every word. I wrote it down over there. Number 5. Rav Shneur Kotler said in the middle of that speech in the name of his father, Rav Aaron. Yeah, that right there, Toronto. Dinner, Yeshiva, Yosori HaTorah. Okay. Rav Aaron said, the Yeshua Fenador cannot come to there what is Mishpeter Given than Ketador, and thus Given Mordechai in Shushan Abira. Translation. The salvation of a generation can only come through one who did not transgress the sin of the generation. And that was Mordechai in Shushan. What is the most outstanding feature of Mordechai? Most probably a feature for which Jews in Shushan were condemning him. The king has commanded that everybody is supposed to bow down before Haman. Mordechai lo yichre v'lo yishtachave. 3-4 times it says in the Megillah, Mordechai will not bow nor bend. And then people in the palace tell Haman, yom yom, day after day, Mordechai doesn't bow. Everybody bows, bends, scrapes before Haman, not Mordechai. He certainly raises the ire and the anger and the wrath of Haman. I can imagine somebody telling Mordechai, you want to be a full monarch? Go sit in the pearls someplace in Shushan And don't stand here every day in the presence of this Haman and provoke him. I don't need the fruitcake. Mordecai will not bend or bow. Absolutely not. Not only that, it gets even worse. If you take a look at the number 6 on the second page, so you will see the first sentence that I have underlined is the sentence that was the heart of last week's shiur. That was pasuk number 84 in the Megillah, the swing pasuk. Vatan Esther Vatoma. Esther said, Shelati Ubakashati. What I'm asking, what I seek, if I have found favor in the eyes of the king, let the king come tomorrow with Haman to a party that I will make for him. The next part that's on the line, Vayetzeh Haman Vayomahu, this is from the first party. Haman on that day went out, Sameach V'tov Lev, very happy, heart was good. Here he had been invited, the only one in the realm who was invited to a party together with Esther, and now he's invited to tomorrow's party. Only the three of them. V'chiros Haman is Mordechai Bishar HaMelech, and when Haman sees Mordechai in the gate of the king, V'lo kom v'lo sominenu, he didn't get up. V'lo so. In Yiddish, they say it's getreiseled. There was. It made absolutely no difference to the world, to Mordechai, that Haman just walked by. Now, wait a minute. This time that he doesn't bend down is different than all the previous. Because now we know that Haman has decreed the destruction of the Jewish people. This is Hitler walking by now. Yemach Shalai. And Mordechai, obstinate, stubborn, extremist, Vayimoleh Haman on Mordechai Kemo, and Haman became full of anger and wrath against Mordechai. So he goes home, he comes back home, and he tells his wife Zeresh of all of his, what this fellow Mordechai is doing to him. Notice that he's sitting on the top of the world is not enough for him. That one Jew, so you know, I need all my gunish, for I care whether he stands up or he doesn't stand up. It would seem that Mordechai is taunting him. Mordechai is creating all this anger. So, of course, his wife and friends tell him, make a gallows. A gallows 50 cubits high and hang Mordechai. According to Rav Shimon ben Yochai, the terrible compromise that brought about the change from feeling that Babel is Admas Lech, a foreign land, to making it home, happened when Jews bowed down before the statue of Nebuchadnezzar. There's one Jew who didn't do that, and that Jew is Mordechai. He will continue not to bend, bow, or scrape before anybody. I hear the words of Rabban. The salvation of a generation can only come through one who did not commit the sin of the generation. Mordechai, for him it's important not to bow, not to bend. Do you know how I see Mordechai? The Chav of Salvation, in one of his, in a hesped that he gave for Rav Chaim Heller, who was one of his rebbeim. Chaim Heller was was a Jew who lived through the middle of the last century, much past the middle of the last century, who had been yet in, who saw the Lashon, the Nitziv, Reb Yosef Dov, he saw a 19th century generation of Gedolim. So the Chosh said about Reb Chaim Hella, in Davni we say, in Shmon Esrei, our tzaddikim, our chassidim, v'al zikni, v'al pleitas sofrein. Pleitas sofrein means the remains of the great scribes. Every generation, there's somebody who reminds you of previous generations. In West Hampstead, there was what my father Rashon called the old man. I think my father was much older than the old man. But the old man was an old man. Used to come to Davin every Shabbos. His name was Mr. Kreitzman. He had lived in the house of Reb Meir Simcha in Dvinsk, the Or Shameach. So I remember when I would see this old man, I saw the Or Shameach, the Meshech Chachma, I saw him with my eyes. I think in 1930 or 31, this old Jew had seen the Chafetz Chaim in the train station in Warsaw. He was sort of a connection to previous generations. In Shushan, if you wanted to see before your very eyes the image of an Al-Naharos Babel Jew from 70 years ago, if you forgot what that looked like, there was a man who walked the streets of Shushan who still remained Al-Naharos Babel. He had never made peace with the exile. For him it was Golos. He will not bow, he will not bend, he will not compromise. That man was Mordechai HaYehudi. He was the one who represented what Jews should be. He didn't make the mistake of generation. So Rav Aaron said, the salvation of a generation comes only for those who have not committed the sin of the generations. We're going to digress for one moment, and we're going to get back to the grand finale of this year. Number three. First, number four, and then number three. One of the psukim in the Megillah that the entire congregation says, Ish Yehudi Hoyo Vishushan Abira. Number four, Ish Yehudi Hoyo Vishushan Abira. There was a Jew in the capital Shushan Shmo, and his name was Mordechai ben Yoyer ben Shimi ben Kish, Ish Yemini. The usual meaning of Ish Yemini means that he was from the tribe of Binyamin. This Jew, Asher Hoglomi Yerushalayim, who went into exile from Yerushalayim, Im HaGola, with the very first wave of exiles, Asher Hoglosom Yechonio Melech Yehuda, that went into exile with Yechonio King of Yehuda, Asher Heglon Nuhamnetzah Melech Babel, that Nuhamnetzah King of Babel had sent him into exile. I'm reading it, one Jew, is a Jew who carries with himself the feeling I'm in Gaulus, not home. You know where Mordechai still is? He's by the rivers of Babylon. Eich noshir et shir Hashem alach masnecha. On the left-hand side of the page, number six, I'm not going to go through it in detail, but basically the Gemara right next to Ish Yehudi Hoyo Vishushan Abira. The Gemara asks the following question. When it says Ish Yehudi, Ish Yehudi usually means that one is from the tribe of Yehuda. Ish Yemini means he's from the tribe of Binyamin. So there's a discussion in the Gemara, is he from Yehuda or is he from Binyamin? And there are different, there are different opinions. His father was from Binyamin, his mother was from Yehuda. There's another pshat in the Gemara that he was really from Yehuda. Why is he called Ish Yemini? Because it's all Binyamin's fault. Who came from Binyamin? Shaul. You listened to the Haftarah last week. Shaul permitted the king of Amalek, Agag, to remain alive. And how was a descendant of that god? If not for Binyamin, there would not have been a Haman in the days of Mordechai and Esther. So the Gemara goes back and forth. Either he's from Yehuda, or he's from Binyamin, or he is a composite of the two. He's from Yehuda, and he's from Binyamin. So I want to say something else. Ish Yehudi hoya b'Shushan HaBirah. There was a Jew in Shushan HaBirah. Yehudi represents, as the Gemara says, a rejection of idolatry, a good yid. But you know what this pasuk is telling us? Ish Yehudi hoya b'Shushan HaBirah. There was a Jew in Shushan HaBirah whose name was Mordechai ben Shimi ben Kish Ish Yemini. You know what Ish Yemini means? One Jew who remained faithful to the oath. Im Eshvachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yemini. Not enough to be a good yid. Not enough to be an Ish Yehudi. You have to be an Ish Yemini also. Mordechai is the model, the shining example, the one who remains from that previous generation. If you want to take a look what it meant to be a Jew sitting by the rivers of Babylon, a Jew who until that moment feels that the earth beneath him is impure and unclean, doesn't belong here. One Jew like that was left in that city. And that one Jew is the one who's capable of bringing the salvation of a generation. Only one thing is left. Only one thing is left. It's number 7. And 7a. In Sefer Ezra it says, I shall go to Zerubbabel. You know who came back to Eretz Yisrael from Babel with Zerubbabel? Yeshua, Nehemiah, Seraya, Re'aya, Mordechai. After the Purim story, Mordechai went on Aliyah. Maybe his neshama told him that he had to stay there until he can assist Esther in saving the Jewish people. The Ish Yemini goes home. And then I have the Radak over there on the line. Mordechai Dilshon, who Mordechai Yehudi, the Radak says this Mordechai. Don't make the mistake of thinking it's another Mordechai. This is Mordechai Yehudi. That Bilshon Yitachen Shu Ish Acha, the name Bilshon that comes afterwards is not connected to it. Maybe it should say Mordechai and Bilshon. And then it says, Mordechai Hu Asher Hoya Yoshi B'Shar HaMelech B'Yimei HaMelech HaKashverosh. That was the Mordechai who sat in the gate of the king in the days of HaKashverosh. Okay. That's it. So it means like this. It means like this. The story of the Megillah is not a story of exile. The story of the Megillah is, on the contrary, the ultimate of the Megillah is that not only Mordechai, but every Jew has to be both equally. You have to be Ish Yehudi and an Ish Yemini. if you're going to be one without the other. No good. That's what Rabban, meant. This Mordechai was the example. That's what the God of salvation said. He's the one who presents the picture of what did a Jew look before Jews bowed down to the statue in the days of Nebuchadnezzar. So in the final analysis, both Rav Shimon ben Yochai and his students are correct. Except that Rav Shimon ben Yochai is taking us back to the source, to the cause. The students of Rav Shimon ben Yochai are showing, look what happened because of that compromise. What is the cause and what the other is the effect? But the ultimate message of the Megillah, I don't know how many people get it, you know, but the ultimate message of the Megillah, as far as I'm concerned, is to do exactly what Mordechai did. He had reached the pinnacle and the heights of power. Now read the Megillah. Mordechai got some of the Melech. Mordechai went after before the king in the royal raiments and the robes of kingship and power and prominence, and the house of Haman was given to him. He has everything that a Jew could want. You know what he does? Leaves it all behind. And quiet! And he goes to Eretz Yisrael. He remains the ultimate Ishmi. Chag Sameach. I'm going to miss you. Somehow, I'm going to miss you. But I have important work to do. And I hope I get it done.
After Pesach.